The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, you know, Georgia's craft brewing industry, it may not be as big as, say, California, which has over 900 craft breweries, but still Georgia is home to just under 160. And so the growing industry contributes nearly $2 billion to the state's economy. Well, today we're going to take a deeper dive into the world of craft brewing with a focus on women within the industry. And by the way, we're asking you, what makes for a good craft beer? So we'll talk about all of that. It's a special edition of Closer Look coming up. But first, from the WABE newsroom, Georgia is set to regulate vaping the same as smoking. That's after state lawmakers passed a bill making a finable offense in restricted areas, as we hear from WABE's Jess Mador.
The legislation updates Georgia's definition of smoking to include vaping and bans it in most public areas with a fine of at least $100. In Georgia, smoking with other tobacco products is already prohibited in enclosed spaces, including restaurants and bars, offices, and medical facilities. Secondhand smoke exposure is long known to be hazardous to human health. Research on vaping is ongoing, but the CDC is warning that e-cigarettes produce dangerous substances, including heavy metals like nickel, tin, and lead, cancer-causing chemicals, and ultra-fine particles that can damage the body. Jess Mador, WABE News.
Georgia's Department of Transportation says brace for more traffic as schools go on spring break. Alex Helmick has that story.
Areas around some of Metro Atlanta's biggest tourist attractions, like the aquarium, Six Flags, and the zoo, will see a significant increase in traffic, according to GDOT. That as many K through 12 schools start spring break today. The department says roads will be particularly bad today, as well as the last weekend before students return, April 7th through the 9th. Throughout most weekdays next week, though, GDOT expects a regular amount of congestion. Alex Helmick, WABE News.
Atlanta recording artist DeJuan Hart, known as Young Dro, is hoping his Guns Down initiative will help keep black kids in Georgia safe. Dormaya Vance has more from one of the stops in Clayton County.
That's a group of several Clayton County students freestyling with Young Dro. He invited them to showcase their rap skills following a discussion on issues like guns and crime. Dr. Angela Horison Collier with Clayton County Public Schools says the event targets young black men.
This is our attempt to reach those young men at a critical point in their lives to hopefully change the trajectory of their lives.
The initiative is an educational tour with resources like a mentorship program, allowing students to talk with Young Dro about their personal experiences. The Bankhead rapper says it still takes a village to raise younger generations.
If they're in your village and they want to make sure you get the way you're going in life, that's the village you chose.
School officials in Clayton say this initiative is an example of what's to come from a new YES program that they say will provide safe and creative spaces for their students. Dormaya Vance, WABE News.
And finally,
this one to center. Drifting back, Harris has it, and the Braves, a winner on opening day in 2023.
One down and 161 more to go. The Atlanta Braves began the Major League Baseball season with a win over the Washington Nationals. Game 2 is Saturday at 4:05, and the Braves' home opener of the season is next Thursday at Truist Park against the San Diego Padres. And by the way, the Braves will be in St. Louis coming up soon. Y'all know who I'm rooting for. You're listening to Closer Look. Back in a moment.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. As a journalist, we deal in facts. Here's a fact. Y'all love beer in this country. In fact, according to the Brewers Association, folk love beer so much in the United States, there's also an affection for craft brewed beer in particular. Total beer sales by volume edged up 1% in 2021, while craft brewery sales rose 8% to 24.8 million barrels. Wow. Again, that's according to the Brewers Association. And as always, folks should drink responsibly and be of legal age. As for Georgia's craft brewery industry, perhaps one way to describe it is we're still in our, I don't know, toddler phase, maybe pre-K, I don't know. But the latest data reveals as of 2021, 23% of brewery owners were women and just 2% of all breweries were fully woman-owned. And that too from the Brewers Association. So to kick off this theme show to discuss all of this, we welcome Tracy Bardigan. She's the chapter lead for the Atlanta Pink Boot Society. Tracy, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
For having me.
Let's begin here because I read a piece that was titled Gone Are Those Days, Craft Beer Market to Reach $191.13 billion by 2028. The future looks promising after decades of losses. You agree with that?
I hope it's promising. We have a lot of positive growth, and I think this industry is also growing in a way where we're realizing that you can't always just do the same thing and have the same input and the same people in it. So having a lot of opportunities for growth and diversity has been really helping the industry. So let's hope it keeps growing.
You know, also in that article I just mentioned, they talked about the success of craft beer market is not solely due to larger regional breweries, but that half of all beer brewed in the U.S. came from small companies and that they, quote, rely on a local following. How key is a local following?
It is instrumental. I manage Firemaker Brewing and we're located in downtown Atlanta. We opened 8 days before the great pandemic and we would not have made it through if it were not for our local community. So we had people coming in and trying our beer for the first time with a mask on and having to get 32 ounces of it to go. So without the community, there's no way you can have a successful business without appreciating that people have two finite resources, which is time and money. And if they're coming to spend that with you, you need to be very appreciative of it. And, you know, breweries are also a fantastic gathering place for people and all different age ranges and families and every person is, we try and make feel welcome, or that's my own goal.
And we should note that Georgia has had to come a long way, particularly as legislation was involved, because I remember covering this some years back. There was all this brouhaha, no pun intended. God, that was awful. I know.
That was good. I love puns. That was good.
That was awful, Rose. There was legislation. I covered it. I remember doing a series on Eventide, our good friends down there. Just remind our folks what legislation had to be enacted to sort of get you all in the mix here.
Sure. So folks who've been in Georgia for over, I guess, now 7 years will probably remember that the way that we used to be able to sell beer out of our own tap room was by providing or selling a tour. You would be able to have a sample with that, and with that sampling, then you could get 3 to 4 pours of whatever's on draft. Fortunately, due to the work of the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild and some other other great resources, we were able to establish a change where now we're able to, you can go to your favorite taproom, you can go to Eventide, Firemaker, elsewhere, all these great breweries, and you can now purchase a pint of beer or a 4 ounce or a flight and experience a wider variety. However, we're still constantly trying to push for more growth within the guild and legislative changes. We're not able to sell more than 288 ounces to go per person per day for people. We're not able to donate product to, say, a nonprofit has a gala and they want us to donate product. We're not able to do that. So we're still striving for some positive changes, all with the, you know, Georgia Craft Brewers Guild led efforts.
How strong are the Georgia, like that guild and others throughout the nation? Are you see, not criticizing them, but will it take just more folks getting involved to sort of, you know, lobby and advocate for some of the changes that you all want to see?
I think it will take more people being involved. It's also a factor of you don't know what you don't know. So many of our, you know, we've had regulars and friends now that have been coming here to our brewery from day one, and they'll say, hey, you know, I had a couple who they were proposed or they got engaged here, and they said, hey, we want to have, you know, can we have a keg for our wedding? Can we buy it from you guys? And we say, hey, no, sorry, we're actually only able to sell you this amount. You can go to the liquor store right down the street. You can ask to buy it from them. They'll do their normal markup. It'll go through the distributor through the three-tier system, and it'll leave our door, and we'll have to, it's really convoluted. And they go, wow, I didn't realize that. Well, yeah, it's just how the Georgia laws are set up. Don't forget to keep an eye out, vote when you need to vote. And just remember that it takes more change and effort. And it's also coming from the small businesses that are the breweries for the most part, when a lot of the people that, you know, we would like to be able to make changes of, they might have more money in their back pocket because they might be with a larger organization.
So I want to be sure I understand this as well as for our listeners. In terms of large volume, you can go through a distributor, but I can come in and buy large because I'm having a gala for Roe Scott's Home for Wayward Cats. I couldn't get that in volume.
Correct. You could come in and you're able to, you know, you can sit in the tap room and have some pints and hang out. And if at the end of it, you say, you know what, I'm really excited for my gala tonight. Can I buy two cases of beer, two cases of 16 or 12 ounce cans? We'll go, hey, sorry, you can purchase one because the 288 ounces is our cap. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow you can come back, or you and your friend can do, y'all can both buy one case respectively, but you're not able to exceed the limit.
I want to back up a little bit and talk about the mission of the Pink Boot Society. What are y'all doing here?
So the Pink Boot Society is it's an international organization that was established in 2007. The original goal, which is what we're still striving for, is to educate, assist, and empower women in the craft beer industry. And it has since morphed to also include non-binary individuals. And it is further outside of just the scope of craft beer. So it also includes wine, kombucha, any craft fermented beverage. As long as you as an individual identify as non-binary or female or women presenting, you are able and have 25% of your income come from a craft service, craft beverage. You're a bartender, you work for sales, you're a taproom manager, you're able to join. And then on a chapter level and a national level, we have scholarships and stuff like that.
And today, as we focus on women in this industry, I'm also going to go back to 2021. There was a social media post that set off a lot of conversation. Some call it controversial, but sometimes, you know, the message is what the message is. And it was described as the Me Too movement for breweries. First of all, were you shocked, surprised, or more of it's about time we have this conversation?
For myself personally, it almost felt being in it for it and having experiences similar to what everybody else was saying that had happened to me. Mm-hmm. It was almost one of those, well, I've been used to this. This is kind of the industry. It's the tax you have to pay if you want to be a female in a male dominated industry. And you didn't luck out and have a very, you know, understanding and supportive boss or ownership. It felt very sad when it all came out and kind of staggering, the sheer volume, but it also kind of felt like it's time. All right, we can, let's talk about this.
Folks were sharing stories of abuse, sexual harassment, assault, misogyny, sexism, and what was quoted as manipulative tactics by their employers. You know, there, of course, was a call for a culture change in this industry here in this region. Have you seen that?
I think we're trying. Part one is having positive measures in place. Part of it is obviously the the brewers, the people, or the individuals in this industry, it's our responsibility to make sure that we are, if we see it, obviously, you know, see something, say something. But the other part is consumer education. And some people, there are some breweries that have a still not a great reputation, and people know it, but they go, yeah, I mean, the beer's good though. And it's my neighborhood bar. So at what point, and you know, we also don't want to have people losing their jobs, but how do we hold people accountable?
And we should note that Closer Look contacted some of those breweries that were named in the social media post, and it's still out there. There was New Rim Brewing Company, Tucker Brewing Company, and Pontoon Brewing. They did get back to us. We're going to post their full statements online, and they all cited they've implemented intervention training, counseling, HR support. New Rim has incorporated a diversity council. So, Tracy, is this enough in terms of a step in the right direction?
It is a step. I think a lot of times, anytime you're, even on a personal level, if you implement something in your life, you implement a New Year's resolution, the important thing is that, are you still doing it by March? So these companies, you can implement it and you can say, hey, we have this diversity, we have this, we're doing this, but then it's a deeper level. You have to go and figure out, okay, if we're only going to hire individuals, let's just say on the brew side, who've only worked in a brewery. However, there are a litany of transferable skills that people can use, and maybe you just need a technical knowledge. And so it goes deeper than, well, we're trying to hire people, but they don't exist. Mm-hmm. So it's systemic. How do we get these new people, and how do we train people? How do we let individuals know, like, hey, you don't have to know how to brew beer to start working at a brewery. You can be HR, you can be payroll, you can be a taproom manager, you can be a bartender, you can be, you know, you can be a cellar person. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, it's not just brewing beer and serving beer. There's a lot of things in between.
And how's the Pink Boot Society? What are you all working to do to improve conditions for not just folks of color and women and those in the LGBTQI space community to work in these spaces? What initiatives are you all involved in?
So we had a record number of collaboration brews this year. So that is a certain Yakima Valley, which is a hop district or hop farm. They create a blend every year, specifically for Pink Boots, and breweries can buy that, brew a beer with it. We had a record number in Atlanta this year. We had, I think, 7 mm-hmm. collaboration brew days, which was exhausting and awesome. But the money that we get from some of these donations will also go to things like, we're able to sponsor scholarships for people. We're able to do Cicerone training, off-flavor training. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a class on very exciting jockey box training in April. Mm. It's trying to get more of these skills that maybe you don't know about yet, and also the network. So how can I introduce you to someone else I know? Even if for us, for our Atlanta chapter personally, we're not very strict on if you're a member or not. We're like, come on, let's go hang out. We'll teach you everything we know.
Now, Tracy, hang with us. We're going to take a break. I'm speaking with Tracy Bartigan. She's a chapter lead for the Atlanta Pink Boot Society. And we're talking about women in the craft brewing industry. When we come back, we're going to bring more folks into this conversation. So hang with us. You're listening to Closer Look. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Question, pay attention. Raise your hand if you're a certified advanced Cicerone. Okay, have no idea what that is. Keep listening. Jen Blair raised her hand, one of only 4 advanced Cicerones. Cicerones? What's the plural?
Cicerones.
Cicerones. Cicerones. In Georgia. And the only female in the state to hold this title. She's a judge for the National Beer Judge Certification Program and was recently named among the 75 people to watch in the beer industry. Welcome to the show, beer educator, brewer, and activist, Jen Blair. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Question, and my sister just texted me, Big Sis, What's a Cicerone?
Yes. Yeah, so a Cicerone is the beer equivalent of something like a sommelier. Mm-hmm. So there's four different levels of certification you can get, each one requiring more and more technical knowledge. So currently I am in the third level, advanced Cicerone. I'll be taking my master Cicerone exam later in the year. Currently there are only three women who are master Cicerones. So I hope to be joining their ranks. But yes, it's, you know, depending on what your goals are in the beer industry, it's really fantastic for people who are customer facing in mm-hmm. terms of being able to serve beer correctly, you know, interact with the customers in a way to help them appreciate the beer as well. So there's a lot of different areas that it can be really beneficial, really, for anybody throughout the beer industry to have at least some level of Cicerone certification.
What types of, I guess, other related in industries or sectors reach out to you for your expertise? I'm imagining if someone's opening a restaurant or something like that, they want you to come in and help them, you know, decide on what types of beer they're going to serve, or being able to educate their staff. When someone like me says, I don't know what I want, I just want something that's light and goes well with French fries.
Right. Same. But yeah, so I think that hospitality, of course, restaurants are, that is a growing area. Which I think is great, because so many people have fine dining programs, they have sommeliers on staff or as consultants, and then they're not really giving that much thought to what kind of beer they have in their lineup. And there's really an opportunity there. Beer pairs so well with food, and it pairs with a very, and I know I'll make the wine people mad, but it pairs with so many more dishes and flavors than wine can. And it's, you know, it's really an opportunity for people to discover an entirely new beverage. So hospitality is a big one. I do get a lot of questions about staff training. Again, you know, how to present beer, how to talk to the customers about beer, how to make sure that beer is in good condition. And I, you know, I get a fair amount, like, here and there from mm-hmm. someplace like a cruise line was looking to implement a new craft beer program for all of their ships, and just needed somebody to tell them where to even start. Mm. And then, you know, a lot of new breweries and planning who just kind of have questions about what should we serve? What kind of glassware should we have? What kind of, you know, draft system should we have? So really there's a ton of different areas outside of, you know, only breweries where this knowledge comes in handy.
Let's talk about your training and the path into all of this. How long does it take?
It depends. So I started my Cicerone journey in 2016. I became a certified Cicerone, and I earned my advanced Cicerone in 2018. So that, you know, for me, that was a 2-year time frame. For other people, they might find studying for a year to be sufficient. Mm-hmm. Some people might feel like they need more, but it really depends a lot on how much focus you have mm-hmm. to give to it, you know, how much time you can prioritize for that. And really so much of it too is what your real world experience mm-hmm. is, and what you're doing outside of, out of just studying. So for instance, Tracy was talking about doing jockey box training. Mm-hmm. That's something that, you know, those are skills that you also need for Cicerone, but those are going to benefit you.
And take that further, take that further for our listeners. What is that?
Sure, that jockey box? Mm-hmm. Yes, so that is if you're at a beer festival or any kind of festival where they're pouring beer out of what looks like a cooler, that's a jockey box. It is a cooler. And there's, you know, different kinds. And that's where that training comes into play of what kind of jockey box do I want? How do I operate it? That's, mm-hmm. you know, that is a huge thing, especially like Tracy said, for a lot of sales reps who are going out into the field and, you know, have to set up this jockey box, and they don't really have training on that. So it's Cicerone kind of delivers the theoretical knowledge mm-hmm. for you, and then you can bring your applicable experience into your Cicerone journey as well.
Does it take a while for your palate to be able to understand the different flavors, and you can taste one beer, you're fine, then go right to another one and be able to, you know, sort of dissect it and analyze it? That's got to be incredible.
It's, I mean, it's one of my favorite things, and I'm constantly learning new things about my own palate, you know, new flavors to try to identify, and just as important, what caused those flavors. You know, you have some flavors that are really beneficial in some beers, and in another beer, it would be considered a flaw. Hmm. So I think that, you know, one thing that I do a lot in training people with beer judging, with developing their palate, is you're the best judge of what your perceptions are. Mm-hmm. And where that challenge comes in is being able to communicate that in such a way that somebody, say, listening to or reading your impressions can have that mental picture. I always tell people, like, think about you're talking to a police sketch artist mm-hmm. when you're describing a beer. When you're finished, does what you describe look like what you tasted? And those skills build. But really, I mean, anybody can start with their palate training right away. And I mm-hmm. think it takes less time than people think that it will. But it's always an ever evolving journey in terms of improving your palate. So that's something else that I'd like to tell people, you know, this isn't a one and done. One day you don't suddenly taste this one flavor in a beer, and then you taste it every single time and every other single beer for the rest of time. You don't. My palate changes day by day. Mm-hmm. It changes throughout the day. And so does everyone's. And really the key is just mindfully tasting, because you probably have those vocabulary words, those descriptions in mm-hmm. your brain. And it's just a matter of being able to enunciate that and communicate it to someone else.
You know, we were talking about bringing more diversity into this industry as women, also as women of color, LGBTQI, non-binary, including everyone in this growing industry. How do you see what strides have been made and then what still needs to happen here?
I think the biggest strides that I've seen being made is really people opting out of the status quo, or kind of recognizing that, you know, we've been trying to operate within the status quo and it's not really serving us. Mm-hmm. So we can just create our own communities. We can do these things for ourselves in our own way. And it doesn't have to look like the way that it's always looked like. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I see the greatest strides coming from, are from those, you know, like when you were talking to Tracy earlier, not from people forming diversity committees or, you know, getting like third party HR reporting or whatever, but seeing the communities that have been marginalized working together and saying, we don't need to work within this system anymore. We can build it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And having the access to resources and practice and everything like that to make that happen. And especially here in Atlanta, there's such a huge community of people mm-hmm. who are working to do that.
So before we bring in our next guest, let's get to this. This is going to be kind of the fun part. I want to bring Jen back in here too. Maybe bring Tracy back in here too. So here's the question. How does one go about first beginning to decide what type of beer, or particularly craft beer, that their palate will enjoy? And again, drink responsibly and be of legal right. age. Roast guy said, I can have a beer, Mom. I did not say that. So let's get that out the way. Tracy, what do you suggest?
I am a big advocate. Jen kind of touched on this too. There are so many different types of beers. You can have sweet, you can have sour, you can have malty, you can have caramel and coffee and light and crisp. And the key is to find a space that you're comfortable with, a tap room where you have, or like a place like Red's Beer Garden, where they have a lot of variety. Finding a place that has a lot of variety that you can try and mm-hmm. you feel comfortable with the staff, you can talk about it. But if you're a Moscato drinker, you might like a sour, or there's some very Moscato-y beverages. If you like red wine, you might love Belgian quads, which seems really dark. If you like a black cup of coffee in the morning, like I do, you probably like a stout. And there is something for everyone. So it's just patience and finding good people to talk to.
Jen?
Talk to me. Come find me.
Talk to Tracy. Just call Tracy. Jen?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Tracy said. For me, again, training people on how to talk to customers is one of the things I'm most passionate about, because almost every person who likes craft beer now can tell you about the first craft beer they had that got them into craft beer. But what they usually end up telling you about is how great the experience was with the bartender, with the server, whoever helped them find that. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, people can say, I tried this once and I hated it. And also the server was rude about it. So I guess I don't like this kind of beer. Mm-hmm. So being able to talk to people is huge. If somebody comes in and says, you know, I don't know what I like. I do exactly what Tracy said. Well, what do you normally drink? What flavors do you normally drink? Or what is a beer you've had that you liked? And then I can go from there. And I'll usually give people, you know, a couple of samples and say, you don't hurt my feelings if you don't like either one. But let's start here and try these and tell me what you think. And then we can have that conversation about, I like this flavor in this one. I don't like this one. And then we can continue to build from there until they find a style that they're comfortable with.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about adding more diversity to this growing field. And we will settle on a nice light craft beer for the Rose Scott Home for Wayward Cats Gala coming soon to the region. We're back in a moment. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. You've heard me say this before because y'all are faithful listeners. It's never about the destination, but the journey. And as we continue today's programming about women and craft brewing in the industry and efforts to bring more diversity, we turn to Josie Footman Smith, one of the owners of Our Culture Brewing in Atlanta, and Jen Price, the founder of Crafted for Action, an organization focused on building an inclusive beer community. Welcome.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, here we go. How would you describe this Atlanta region's overall beer community? Pretty wild, wacky bunch of folks here?
Yep, we are. and growing. Yeah, I like to think that we're like a community, to be mm-hmm. honest with you. We're all just so supportive of one another. We show up for each other, and we just have a lot of love for each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your...
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's a great growing community of people that are very passionate about beer, very entrepreneurial minded, and just love to gather and be in community with one another.
In what ways do you think this region still needs to grow? And perhaps you're going to talk about diversity and to compete with the larger markets one day. What do you think, Josie?
For sure. I think that representation is a huge part of it. Personally, for me, when I walk into a tap room, I'm always like looking out for other people of color. It's been an experience that I'm hoping continues to grow and expand. And mm-hmm. even as someone who is on the brewing side of things, I haven't had the opportunity to brew with a lot of people of color. Mm-hmm. And that's something, even in collaborating with other businesses, that I want to continue to advocate for, because there are so many different palettes and cultural flavors that I hope to bring to this industry.
And Jen, do you think it's not a question that folks don't want to be involved? It's perhaps that more awareness about this industry as a fulfilling and fun way of revenue generating, because we all want to make money. This is something that folks can really get into if they just knew more about it.
Exactly. I think that's exactly it, Rose. I think exposure is everything. We're doing our best to make sure people know about not only the craft beer industry and the Black craft beer industry here in Atlanta, but where it's growing in other cities. And we have these pockets throughout the U.S. where, you know, Atlanta's experience as a craft beer community is replicated. And I think it is all about just making sure that, you know, people of color know about beer and that the beer community knows about people of color. It's really a two-way street.
I want to bring in the other guests because I want all of you to answer this. And the question is, and it's a good one, I guess it's from a listener, is this an expensive industry to get started in? Your thoughts and your opinion on that. And I'll start with you, Jen, here.
As a consumer, no, mm-hmm. it's not. I mean, you can pull up to a brewery and find anything on tap between the prices of five, or you can get something really expensive for like 12, 15 bucks a pour. But it really is, you know, beer is a common beverage, and it's a beverage that's found in every country throughout the world. And it's really, really easy to get into it. All you got to do is have a little bit of courage to pull up to a brewer and ask for something, as Tracy mentioned earlier.
I want to go to Tracy then. Tracy, so you suggest to people the first place to start is just pull up to, you know, a craft brewery and see what the action is.
Yeah, 100%. And exactly like Jen just said, beer is it is vastly more accessible. It should be more accessible to get into than, say, than wine. You want the best beer in a city, you might pay $7-$8 for a pint. You want the best wine in a city, you're going to be paying $300 for a bottle. So it should be more accessible. And it's the tap room. It's our job here to make sure that we make it a comfortable space and we're welcoming people who don't just look like me, who don't just look like whomever.
Mm-hmm. Jen Blair, what do you think for folks wanting to get in this business, where they should start?
Right. I think, and I know Tracy touched on this earlier, one thing that I think is so often overlooked in the beer industry in terms of getting into it on the, you know, on the ownership side or on the employee side, is that it's not only brewer, salesperson, and bartender. There are accountants. There are, you know, I've done beer education and quality for breweries. If you have a, you know, an HR background, like Lord knows the beer industry needs you. But that can also be you have, you know, chemistry or biochemistry. I have a friend who has a degree in English. I have a degree in economics. Like there's so many transferable skills that can come into the beer industry. And it doesn't have to look like going to an expensive brewing program. You know, that can look like working part-time for a brewery cleaning kegs. I know several people now who are brewmasters who started out cleaning kegs and, you know, and worked their way up and worked in different areas to figure out what they wanted. So it doesn't have to look like, again, like that expensive diploma, or even with the Cicerone certification program, that can be very cost prohibitive for people. Mm-hmm. It's more about being a well-rounded beer professional. And for me, as I was making the lateral move into the brewing industry, the thing that was most helpful was I just wrote out a job description of here's what I would like to do in the brewing industry, because mm-hmm. I knew I didn't want to be brewer or salesperson. And those were the jobs I was seeing. So that made it so much easier for me to make a lateral move and also to recognize those opportunities that would be a great spot for me to move into.
All right. Josie, what made you want to open your own local brewery?
I think it goes back to that representation piece of being someone who has always loved beer and hoping to see more people that look like us. I think there was a gap there in terms of people that are just willing to open their spaces and to the points that were mentioned earlier, creating an environment that feels welcoming for everyone and feels authentic, where people can come in and be themselves, and just a love for the craft. I love creating different flavors. You can access many different components from the beer. There are a lot of ingredients that you can implement and kind of create and turn into what you want it to be. And seeing people be able to enjoy that and the looks on their faces when you created something really beautiful to them is a wonderful experience.
And where did you turn to for mentorship or support? And what was that journey like? How long did it take from that, forgive me, Oprah, that aha moment to when you turn the lights on and you're like, I got it. It's my space.
For sure. So we started out homebrewing. So I am an owner of our culture and there are three of us. So we started out homebrewing together as a way to spend time with one another. And then it turned into an avenue of, oh, people really enjoy what we're making. Like this is something where we're not really having a lot of beer left over. So we really want to give this a go. And we started out reaching out to the community. People like Jen Price, I remember she was one of the first events for the craft beer community that I really went to. And just seeing her have conversations with brewers like Konzo, which is one of the first Black breweries in Atlanta, and just connecting with those people and being able to share experiences with them. Right now, we're starting a residency program with Creature Comforts Brewery, mm-hmm. and they're being able to basically give us the full gambit of their processes and their people and allow us to really expand and be able to create our own brewery when it's ready to be launched into the market.
Wow. Jen Price, we know there are always incubators for small businesses to begin with. And you know, there are all these great initiatives and great programs. You think there could be a little bit more in terms of a focus, a specialty focus for this type of industry, craft brewing, to attract folks of color, more women, just, you know, folks who are just wanting to get in this, because you're talking about diversity, mm-hmm. which adds to the coalition, as what Tracy was talking about, in order to get legislation passed. Mm-hmm. So the more folks you got in. So what should some of those initiatives, special initiatives, look like?
You hit the nail right on the head. There needs to be a special focus on increasing the footprint of Black breweries in America and Black and people of color in this industry, women in this industry. There's such a deficit in all of these different segments. And I do agree that if there were some concerted efforts to make that happen, we could really see some progress. But we are seeing that happen, you know, in small segments. We are seeing people start organizations that are focused on increasing the footprint of Black and women and people of color in the industry.
I have a listener who has a question about startup price. Would this vary in terms of someone, like how much capital do they need to probably come in with?
It does vary. And Josie probably could answer that better than me because they are actually going through that process right now to launch their brewery.
Yeah, it is very expensive, Rose. Like $500,000 is kind of what you need. Even before you can produce a drop of beer, you have to have a location secured. You have to be licensed at the local, state, and federal level. And it can take anywhere between 6 to 18 months before you can even make any money off of the, you know, place that you have a lease or a mortgage on.
What's the licensing process like?
It's a lot of documentation and paperwork. They have to come into your space and inspect it to make sure that it is up to quality for you to, you know, basically produce a liquid where people are able to drink it and not get sick.
That is important.
And it just, a lot of, you know, legal loopholes, so it takes a lot of time.
But this is a passion for you, so you are weathering that.
Absolutely, deeply committed, and I think the support of the community and all of the other entrepreneurs and people that are on this path has really propelled us forward.
Jen, what about this mission of the Crafted for Action Conference? It's coming up in June.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's a 4-day hybrid conference from June 14th through 17th. It happens online and then here in Atlanta. And the focus is to create educational opportunities all in one space for people of color specifically, but for the craft community who may be our allies to also come, you know, be next to each other in a tap room here in Atlanta. We're going to be at Atlantucky Brewing, which is one of the two only Black owned breweries here in the state, in the city. Absolutely. There's only two.
Only two.
That have brick and mortars right now. Wow. Hip and Hops and Atlantucky. And we'll be at both of those spaces, actually, welcoming people to the city. We'll have panel discussions for those two full days of the conference, happy hours and parties all throughout the week. It's a really good time. But the goal is to create a space that's welcoming and inclusive for people to learn about craft beer.
I'm going to go around the horn here, as we say, and get your thoughts on where you see this industry in, let's say, 5 years. And I'll start with Tracy.
5 years, I'm going to hope it looks a lot different, but in a good way. We do need, kind of like Josie was saying, there's different flavors, cultural thoughts, everything that comes from a more inclusive and a wider array for an industry. So it's same thing with tap rooms or any business. One of the things that I usually say is, do you want to limit yourself to only the people who always come into your tap room? No, come on. If all you're in it for is the money, be smart, have a more inclusive open tap room. You're going to get more people in. And it's our job as an industry to grow and make sure that we're holding each other accountable, that we're lifting people up, that if we know something that someone else needs to know, whether it is Jockey Box training or off flavor training or other events, even, you know, Jen is doing an awesome outdoor beer class, a couple of sessions of it. And I'm sorry if I just butchered that, Jen, but it's an awesome way to get people who are maybe more interested in or really enjoy being outdoors going, hey, here's a way to kind of cross promote these things. So my goal, my hope is that in the next 5 years, the industry looks, has a lot more diversity, different people, different backgrounds into it.
Jen Blair.
Yeah, I agree with Tracy. And I will also say that Jen Price is absolutely changing the beer industry. Crafted for Action and Craft Beer Con are revolutionary in the industry, and it's only just beginning. So, you know, I know within 5 years, we're going to see more of that. We're going to see more people take a more of a community-centered approach, which we're already seeing, you know, when the kind of the decentralization of these decisions are made by a very small group of very homogenous people. People are opting out of that now and building their own communities. And then those communities are joining each other and becoming even larger. So in the next 5 years, I fully expect that to continue. And as those communities get larger, there's more support, and it's really just changing the way that the brewing industry looks.
Ooh. Josie, 5 years.
Yeah, I hope that there are more people of color both brewing and being educated about beer and being able to join those spaces, a lot more meaningful collaborations where we're actively sharing that knowledge with the people that are coming on the scene. One of the things that we're passionate about doing is not only opening up our space, but creating a pipeline for others to follow behind us. So we really want others to be able to learn from what we've learned from as we go and when we get to where we want to be.
All right. Jen Price.
Yeah, I see the same things these ladies see, and that's a more inclusive space, places where we can be educated and learn more about craft beer, and to be very specific, to see more than 1% of all breweries in America be owned by BIPOC individuals. We have to come 1% out of 92, almost 10,000 breweries.
And if folks are you can break that down, because of the nation's, what we cite as 8,000 breweries, these surveys found only 4% are owned by American Indians or Alaska Natives. Mm-hmm. Asian and Hispanic ownership is about 2%, and 1% of brewery owners are Black.
Mm-hmm. We got to change that.
Yeah. You know, I don't have an ego. My name is on the show, but we need to figure out a craft beer for your beloved public radio host, Roe Scott, right?
We could absolutely do that. I could have brought a whole six pack in here. I didn't know.
Don't get me fired.
Exactly.
A few years ago, we were chronicling the Eventide, our good friends, and we did a community event there, and they came up with a WABE Rose Kolsch. It had some, I don't know what was in it, but it was good. What goes into determine, like, you so far you all spent time with me, you know, if you had to come up with a craft beer, Josie, what would go into it? Some lavender? I don't know. Do you put lavender in a craft? I don't know.
You absolutely can put lavender in a craft beer. I think a little bit of spice too, Rose, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, spice.
Maybe bringing some spice into it. I love to brew with different herbs and spices. So adding those elements and components, and also something that's light and refreshing too.
Rose hits me as a Saison.
Mm.
I have no idea what that is.
It's good. A little earthy. Okay. A little spicy, like she was saying.
Bohemian.
Bubbly. Yeah, it's bohemian, a little bubbly.
All right.
Yeah. But not too much.
Yeah, not too much.
Calm down.
Jen Blair?
Yes, it's so funny because I was sitting there thinking, yeah, definitely Saison, definitely a little bit of spice. So I agree with them. I think that a Rose Saison would be a fantastic beer.
Right. Tracy?
All right, I'm going to go out of left field here. So you said you're going to have a nonprofit for wayward cats, right?
Yes.
So it's going to be called Kitten Mittens, first of all. Proceeds will go towards your organization. And then I'm thinking Kitten Mittens, it's soft, it's pillowy. So a hazy New England IPA with some like rose and hibiscus for the color, but it's going to be more more floral, more citrus, and very soft. So,
yeah. I have a listener that says, you know, often craft beers are just too heavy, too dark, it's too filling for them. And they want to, she says, I want to enjoy my meal, but often I get the wrong one.
Mm.
How can, you know, and this is where you ask the folks at the brewery, this is where, goes back to what Jen Blair does in terms of educating folks. So when folks go into a brewery, what questions should they ask?
I would ask, you know, what do you have on tap that tastes like, and then fill in the blank with the things that you normally drink or eat in your everyday life. And they really could steer you in the right direction. Or if you had a question about what beer should I have with this meal, they'll steer you in the right direction there too. There's so many options.
Are we seeing anything internationally that you think this nation is a little bit behind in terms of how we're brewing these craft beers? Something that you've noticed, or because you mentioned, you know, spices and herbs and things like that. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that overall there are a lot of trends that are really popular in the United States, especially when it comes to things like IPAs or sours. Like those are flavors that people like to drink, so they get brewed a lot. But there are plenty of German-style beers, Belgian-style beers that offer different palates, different types of adjuncts, whether it's different fruits, herbs, spices that you can really take and create really unique flavors with that are lighter and, I think, more refreshing to me.
Is there a trend here in the Atlanta region that you all are noticing? You might want to talk
there was a hazy IPA trend that just won't quit.
Hazy now. Explain that to me. Is that a bad thing?
I'm tired of them, personally.
Jen Blair is laughing.
It won't stop.
What does that mean?
I think I think that there's all, well, so a lot of people, IPAs were commonly associated with like piney, bitter, resinous, because you can have, again, there's however many hundreds of styles of beers you can have. And I'm a fan of the piney, bitter, resinous. That's more old school. That's West Coast style. And East Coast is this very soft, pillowy, juicy. So if a lot of people that come in, they're like, I don't like IPAs, but I love a Hefeweizen. And I could go, or like a wheat beer, like a Blue Moon similar. And we go, okay, well, I don't have a wheat beer on draft, but let me just try this. And they'll be like, oh, this is a great IPA. I'm like, yeah, it's like, it tastes like it's 80% fruit juice. But I'm hoping now, and I don't know if the other three epic ladies here will agree. I feel like I have a lot of people constantly asking for, I want a beer that tastes like a beer. We've literally released a beer that on the can, the tasting notes, is called Fiesta Beer, and it says beer flavored beer. And it has been crushing it right now, because I think people are getting palate fatigue from all these crazy sours and crazy IPAs. And that just might be wishful thinking.
But. Is there a Southern craft beer that, you know?
We have a Southeastern IPA that we coined. It's green and black tea, a little bit of lactose. It's 5.5%, meant to be sessionable. And it's meant to taste kind of like drinking a beer, but also tea. I don't know what the other ones would be, though.
Well, we will all figure it out. Tracy Bardigan, she's the chapter lead for the Atlanta Pink Boot Society. Jen Blair, one of four advanced Cicerones in Georgia and the only female in the state to hold this title. Josie Footman Smith, one of the owners of Our Culture Brewing in Atlanta. And Jen Price, the founder of Crafted for Action. Great conversation. Thank you all for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for trying to bring more diversity into this. Pretty cool. And thank you all for coming up with a craft beer for me.
We got you.
Absolutely.
And that's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are LaShawn Hudson and Daniel Razel. Tiffany Griffith is our supervising producer. Our engineer is Soria Vanderwerth. A reminder, let us know your thoughts on today's program or any other. Send me an email, rose@wabe.org. And if you missed any of today's program, it is always online at wabe.org/closerlook. And of course, you can listen to Closer Look weeknights at 7 p.m. as well as in our podcast. So subscribe to Closer Look wherever you like. We'll have links to all these organizations and all the statements that were presented to Closer Look regarding this special programming on our website too. So check that out. And a reminder, as always, drink responsibly and of legal age. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE Atlanta. Have a good weekend. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.